that's where then we try to bring everything back to. Krishna comes as the Archimurti because of this reason, so that we can remember. Because otherwise, then how are we going to actually know? How are we going to be able to come in contact with the Lord? 26, one should meditate upon the deity. 27, one should render some voluntary service. 28, one should think of the Lord as one's friend. Because he is, he's helping us in that, this idea that God is, you know, the greatest, and therefore he's very terrible. Anytime we do something wrong, then we're always worried that a thunderbolt will come out of the sky and it's soft, and we'll get a pile of ash, you know, sitting there. But that's not actually how he works. If that's how you want to see him, then that's how he'll interact. But actually, he would rather be a little bit more friendly. Of course, we always have to remember he's the bigger friend, and we're the smaller one. 29, one should offer everything to the Lord. Right? Somehow or another, everything, all one's activities, all the connections and everything, then should all be connected to the Lord. 31, one should offer a favorite article, such as food or a garment. These things that you consider very important and very special, those things should be offered to the Lord. 31, one should take all kinds of risks and perform all endeavors for Krishna's benefit. Otherwise, then if there's no risk, that's how one tells how good a relationship is. Women, you see, they'll always test, they'll always deal with the element of risk, right? The test, how much, you know, how strong is the connection with them, like that. So then, one should be willing to do that for the Lord, not just for, you know, the relationships here in the world, in this material world. 32, in every condition one should be a surrendered soul. Right? One should, you know, develop that at all times, all places, all circumstances, one is remembering Krishna, absorbed in Krishna, surrendered to Krishna, like this, that makes it very dynamic. 33, one should pour water on the Tulsi tree, because Tulsi Devi, she's in charge of Vrindavan, so therefore, she's one of the Lord's, you know, main associates. By her grace, then we can be very nicely situated in devotional service. 34, one should regularly hear Srimad Bhagavatam and similar literature. 35, one should live in a sacred place like Mathura, Vrindavan, or Dwarka. 36, one should offer service to Vaishnavas, devotees. 37, one should arrange one's devotional service according to one's means. In other words, what is sustainable, what you could regularly do. You're performing your activities, so there should be a sustainable service. There's always festivals and other kind of things where then we do what's beyond our normal, right? Every day, okay, you have a festival, so you fast until noon, like this. But then you have Janmashtami, where you fast until midnight. So there's always something to push a little bit beyond. So therefore, on one's daily activities, it should be what is actually sustainable. But at the same time, it shouldn't be less than what you could do. Does that make sense? In other words, you have to be very honest and go, well, this is what I could very comfortably do and maintain. In the month of Kartik, October, November, one should make arrangements for special services. Because Kartik is a very dear month to Krishna. It's a month where there's so much devotion, and that's like a codicil in the way of developing of devotion. So then during that month, the special services, special, arrangements, offering lamps, or nice kirtans, or, you know, anything like this, special prashad, anything can be done at this time. 39, during Janmashtami, the time of Krishna's appearance in this world, one should observe a special service, so there should be something special happening on Janmashtami. So the temple will always arrange such things so one can take part in these things. 40, one should do whatever is done with great care and devotion for the deity. Means one should not mechanically do things. Even though it is done, the sadhana is brought to the point of habit. purpose of habit is not that then you won't think about it. The point of habit is then you can absorb yourself in the Lord. Right? If you do something new, like you learn to ride a bicycle, then all you're thinking about is the bicycle and how somehow or another there's a million cars and trees and you're just ready to jump out in front of you. So you can't think of anything else. But as you become expert at riding a bicycle, then you can move around town, move from one place to another without even thinking about it. So that means that's the time you're supposed to be thinking of Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? So whatever is done should be done with care and devotion, because even though you're expert at it, it shouldn't just happen by habit, by routine. One should always be focused. In the beginning, one is focused on simply doing it nicely. Later, one is focused on doing it nicely because one can remember Krishna, right? The beginning is simply, I'm doing it nicely so I don't do it wrong. With practice, you'll always do it right. So now it's a matter of being very conscious of Krishna, being that devotion, all these different kinds of very nice qualities, that those are developed. 41, one should relish the pleasure of Bhagavatam reading amongst devotees and not among outsiders. In other words, there are those who like to perform what they call these Bhagavad Saptas. They, as Sukadev Goswami and Purikit Maharaj recited and heard the Bhagavatam in 7 days, so it's very popular over a 7-day period to hear the Bhagavatam. Slight difference, Sukadev Goswami and Purikit Maharaj, they were performing it 24/7 without eating, sleeping, or drinking. A little bit of a difference. While others, then they are performing these activities, and just at a certain time of the day, they all come together, and then selected stories are told. So these people are very expert at telling stories. They tell really nice stories, and they are very absorbing. They'll tell stories, they'll stop. And when they see the audience is falling asleep, then they'll start singing songs. They'll do all kinds of things. They're very, very good entertainers. So the point is, that's basically what it is. It's a very pious form of entertainment. So that is not, should be of any interest to devotees. You want to hear in the association of devotees where the actual purpose is developing love for Krishna, understanding Krishna, absorbing ourselves in Krishna. So, therefore, that's why it says among devotees and not amongst outsiders, right? Because otherwise you don't hear the locals, sitting around hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, like that. Over in the park, the local punks are having a reading of Bhagavatam. That's not happening, right? Like that. 42, one should associate with devotees who are considered more advanced. One always tries to associate with those who are like-minded and those who are more advanced. By being with those who are more advanced, then more we get more ideas, more it broadens our perspectives like that. Otherwise, we in our own endeavor will develop certain degree of devotional development, but sometimes by habit we don't notice that we could expand it beyond that. So by being with others who are considered advanced, especially if they're more advanced, then we'll always notice that by association. Something we'll notice, something that they do, something they say, that will wake us, bring us to a better understanding. 43, one should chant the holy name of the Lord. 44, one should live in the jurisdiction of Mathura. Goswami continues, now the total regulative principles come to an aggregate of 64 items. As we have mentioned, the first are the primary 10 regulative principles, then come the secondary 10 regulative principles, and added to these are 44 other activities. So altogether there are 64 items for discharging the regulative practice of devotional service. Out of these 64 items, 5 items, namely, worshipping the deity, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, associating amongst the devotees, Sankirtana, and living in Mathura are very important. These 60, okay. So, so out of these 64, these five are the primary, right? I mean, excuse me, these five are the, I'd say, your main. Everything else is actually expanding from these five. As we know, it's like worshiping the deity, so most of these 44 are connected with worship of the deity, like that. But they'll all be connected with that, about hearing about the Lord, associating with devotees. Sankirtan will be chanting the holy name and chanting, you know, both our japa and doing kirtan and living in Mathura, in the Dham. So that means ideally then living in the Dham, you know, in Mathura, in Vrindavan, in Mayapur, or being in the temple or making our house into such a place like that. In some way, somehow or another associated. So these are the how you say, the main items. Then the others then are connecting us, you know, by taking shelter of the spiritual master. That's also then a form of associating with the devotees. But this is then the spiritual master, it's a specific item. So that then connects us and makes the whole thing work. Right? Those are the primary 10. Then continuing, the 64 items of devotional service should include all of our activities of body, mind, and speech. As stated in the beginning, the regular principle of devotional service enjoins that all of our senses must be employed in the service of the Lord. Exactly how they can be thus employed is described in the above 64 items. As Srila Rupa Goswami will give evidence from different scriptures supporting the authenticity of many of these points. So the idea is body, mind, and words, we will be engaged. So then, which ones will emphasize more, then that will be according to what actually engages us, right? Each one of us is an individual, and so then someone may be more into the kirtan, someone more into association of devotees, serving devotees, some more in service of the deity, some more in service of the Dham. So like that, then there's so many different aspects. Make sense, right? The idea is that it's personal, so one has to find what works for oneself. That's very, very important. It means, I think we, I'm not sure if we discussed it. Yeah, no, we discussed it here. That if Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, this is the basis, then we have to see how that applies to us. That doesn't mean it's speculative and we just throw out things as we please, because the point is, at the end of the day, body, mind, and words must be engaged. So if you throw out too many things, then you're not going to have much to engage, unless, of course, you know, you're a vegetable or something, then you might be doing fine. But if you're a little more active, you know, like that, then you might find how many of these things you can somehow or another connect yourself to, that will then keep you absorbed. Any questions on any of this?
Is Sadhu Sangha more important than the other four?
Is Sadhu Sangha more important than the other four? All of them are important. They all go together, because in Sadhu Sangha, what you do, you hear Bhagavatam, you perform kirtan, you worship the deity, you live in the Dham. But you would start with Sadhu Sangha, because we see in the primary 10th regular principles that taking shelter of the spiritual master then is, and hearing instruction, that's of, you know, primary importance. So it will start there. In other words, by association, the devotees will take up the activities of devotional service, and that will be maintained, but all these other activities are there. It's not a matter of that then they're all ignored or anything like that. Does that make sense? One always sees when something is brought to the front, it doesn't mean now, oh, that is better, we drop the others. We don't use this kind of Western idea of all or nothing. You know what I'm saying? It's a matter of this is important, so we just have to pay a little bit more focus on that, just to make sure it works. Is that okay?
Yes.
I have one question, Maharaj.
A little louder.
One question regarding visiting the Dham and living in the Dham.
Visiting the Dham and living in the Dham.
Yes. If we are visiting the Dham, it's a place where Lord has lived and has performed his pastime. So what should be the mood of a devotee, or what should be the mood of a person who is about to visit a dham, and how should one approach a dham?
Okay. The dham is the Lord's place. That's where, it's not that he lived, he is living. So the Lord's always present in the dham. That's what makes it special. You know, is that it's not like a kirtya where some one pastime is performed there, so it becomes very auspicious. The dham is some place where the Lord is always residing. That's what makes it very special. Whether we're able to actually directly see him or not, that's another question. But he'll be there in the form of the deity. So that's why then the regular principles are around the worship of the deity. So then through the deity, through the holy name, the association of devotees, then we can appreciate the dham. In the dham, that means when we are appreciating the dham, glorifying the dham, then we also can clean the dham and we can decorate. Right? So cleaning is a very important element. Krishna is very clean. Everything should be very clean. By that purity, then the mind is elevated, because the mind in creation is generated from the mode of goodness. Therefore, if you're in a clean environment, the mind is much more inspired. Right? Does that make sense? It's just like, let us say, you've been to India, no? Okay. So now, let us say you have a market, okay, that men go to, like Bodh Bazaar, right? And so, what's the presentation of goods in Bodh Bazaar? Flash, lots of lights, nice. Yes?
Yeah. Nothing like that.
Huh?
Nothing like that.
Nothing like that at all. Why? Because men go to get something done. So they're working with more with the intelligence and more with passion. Right? Intelligence is born from passion. So as long as they can officially get their work done, there needs to be no show. Right? We have a big sack full of nails that are poking out through the through the burlap bag, and as long as, you know, they can get how many kilos you want into something else, you can walk off with it, then that's good enough, right? Right? Price is good, you know where it is, and that's, right? Okay, because you're dealing with the mode of passion there. Okay, now, if ladies are going to go to the market, then what kind of market is best for them? Right? It's called a mall, right? Nice, shiny, air-conditioned, lots of lights, nice plants, lots of, you know, there's a very nice presentation. Why? Because then the mind is clean. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, you know, it must be very clean, very tidy, like that. So that's the whole idea, is the more your life is clean, the more it is orderly, then the more the mind will be elevated. Does that make sense? So that's right, the very important thing that the dham is clean. Right? So if your house is a temple, it should be clean. The temple itself should be clean. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the idea behind it, is the cleanliness. Right? Like, in India, people don't wear shoes in the house, not because they're all fanatics and they like to get cracks on the bottom of their feet. Right? You know? It's a matter of standards of cleanliness that they're worried about. Right? So therefore, they create a very septic atmosphere, a very motor goodness atmosphere. Does that make sense? Yeah, that's it. Okay? So one should appreciate the dham, and as much as possible, render service by beautifying, cleaning, like this kind of thing. But otherwise, remembering, you know, glorifying, these are all aspects. Does that make sense?
Thank you.
Something else? Yes.
Sometimes when I'm trying to present Krishna consciousness, just, you know, as a method, I tend to crack a lot of jokes and try to make it very light. So does that fall under the aspect of entertainment?
Whatever works for you. The point is the more you're convinced, the more you can just walk right in. And otherwise, then if it makes it easier for you and the audience appreciates it, they feel they get some value from it, Then if it's light, there's a lot of jokes, it's nice. But if they feel that it's just, you know, more just joking in that, but they came to something serious, and so therefore they go down to the local, you know, the local yoga center, and therefore try to pick something up because there's a more sober mood and some nice incense and some nice, you know, A-wave music and stuff like that, then it was too much joking. Because the point is people want substance. So now, according to the individual personality, that will be done through making people comfortable through joking, or it may be some nice stories, it may be some personal accounts, it may, whatever works, that's all. You know what I'm saying? It's just whatever works. Just, the point is when you make a joke, don't expect that the people have to laugh. Otherwise, you'll feel bad. And if you feel bad, you'll become more insecure. The more insecure you are, the quality of your presentation goes down. Like that. The whole idea is if it makes you feel more secure so that you can talk better and present the philosophy, use it. Right? But don't use it because you heard someone else use it and therefore it worked. That's not there. I remember that one very large temple, they would always do, how you saying, weddings, right? Indian community and all that. And so they would joke a lot, right? You know, it's a very common thing when you're doing a wedding that they'll make a lot of jokes about the different things, you know, like that. So then somehow or another, the arrangement, we happened to be there at one time and doing a wedding for somebody. And also a lot of our students happened to be there. So then the thing was extremely formal, very sober, and very long, right? And, you know, proper chanting of the mantras and explanation of exactly what was going on and all that. And the people, there was no jokes. And so the people thought it was great. It was the first time they actually knew what was going on in the way. Before it was just, you know, something pleasant and fun. So the point is both work. You know what I'm saying? The main point is if people feel they got some Krishna conscious substance from it, then it's successful. So that's what you have to judge. It doesn't matter that this technique, that technique, it doesn't matter. You know what I'm saying? It's like, right? If it gets you from point A to point B and it's successful, then it works. Does that make sense?
No, it's the statement of the leader that the mind can drag us off in certain directions, and it's the intelligence that brings us back.
Mm-hmm.
Explaining that the mind is actually in goodness and intelligence.
It's born from goodness. It doesn't necessarily mean what it's interested in is goodness. It likes an atmosphere of goodness. You know what I'm saying? The person likes the atmosphere of goodness to eat their McDonald's burger. Right? They like it nice and clean and everything like that. They don't like it. They wouldn't like it nice and grungy. You know, they like it nice and clean and tidy. You understand? It's, in other words, it's the environment. Just like the cow, is by nature the body is in the mode of goodness. So they like a very clean, regulated environment. The cleaner and more regulated and more, personal their environment and interaction, then the happier they are, the more milk they give. But what a cow is interested in is just chewing grass and, you know, moving and, you know, like that kind of stuff. Does that make sense? So you always have to be able to distinguish when you're dealing with something. Generally, there's at least two aspects of something. There's the direct activity or aspect itself, then there is the connection to Krishna, what you do with them, consciousness. You know what I'm saying? It's just like we say, you focus, like we were discussing the other day, you focus, and because of your focus, you make the proper endeavor. Then that's how you're going to get your best result. But that's a generic statement. That could be for anything. The guy wants to rob a bank, the same thing will work. He's not focused, he gets caught. He's focused, he may be successful. Right? Then there's the question of the quality of what the work is, and what is your ultimate goal, and all that kind of aspect. Does that make sense? So there's fundamental laws of God that always function. So those laws are the same for the devotee and for the non-devotee. The difference is, the devotee uses them in connection to Krishna, the non-devotee doesn't. But the laws are the same. That's what is the point that's missed. The devotees think, well, devotional simply means philosophy, right? That when I have practical life, then I have to turn to the karmis. No, the karmis need to turn to us. We know the laws of God. We know how it works. Right? Does that make sense? So that is the point that's missed. Is the Krishna consciousness has all the elements. Because you're dealing with God, who's the source of everything. That means everything, you know, comes from the actual Krishna conscious platform. That's the natural position of moving into. Right? But in the conditioned state, you're in the material world. That means you have to make things work here. That's what you have to deal with. You have to be able to operate material energy. But you're operating it for the Lord's pleasure. But the operation is exactly the same for a devotee as a non-devotee. Does that make sense? Like that. So you have your natural formulas that always apply. Then you'll have your traditional means of, you know, so many opportunities to apply that formula. You'll have applications that you would consider more pious and less pious. Right? Does that make sense? And then, naturally, pious ones are more easily connected to God consciousness than impious ones, because the pious ones generally are pious because of the good qualities and that are associated with it. But the core principles that make it work are still the same as even impious activities. You know what I'm saying? Another question, yes.
You were talking last time about that someone can think of Krishna throughout all their activities, like in rushing and leaving and all this kind of thing. So I was just wondering, I have two questions. One of them is, do we do things differently, like all these activities in a different way? Like, does Krishna describe a way that we should do things? That's one. Like, each of these kind of daily activities. And then my second question was, what's the mentality of a dislike of someone who's in Krishna consciousness while they're doing this? Like, maybe you could give an example.
Means, for most all activities that you have, there is some shastric direction so that one can be comfortable that one is acting according to Guru Sadhana and Shastra. Those directions then are for what is the ideal, the ideal situation, the ideal activities, because all things connect to each other. So sometimes something that is in one activity, it may not appear, why is that important, but there are connections between that and something else. Does that make sense? Just like, let's say, give an example. It's a strange example, but it's something that I was quite shocked when I found out there was a connection. You know, having grown up in the Western culture, I had no idea that there was a connection between what you ate and, you know, then the results of going to the toilet. You know, that what you ate could affect that. Like that. So it wasn't until I got to India and I found that if you weren't careful what you eat, then you get diarrhea. Like that. So it was actually a great shock to me when actually it was pointed out. Because even though my stomach was getting worse and worse, I kept going on with my normal ways of eating because I made no connection between them, because the culture I grew up in didn't make any such connection. There was no idea of that. You know, you grow in a colder climate, you have less bugs that you're dealing with and less things to bother you. And so the cold climate, generally, when you're in a tropical climate, becomes much more obvious. You know, does that make sense? So, like that, sometimes by the Western upbringing, we don't understand the connections. You know, while something you do in one thing has a connection to another, it doesn't. One, it's not seen. But at the same time, as the Vedic then will give something that's more of a holistic lifestyle. So basically, for us, the main lifestyle is Pancharatrik. So most all the daily things like brushing teeth and going to the toilet and all that are explained in connection with Pancharatra, if not within the Vedic. So then those things are there. The, how do you say, as described in Chaitanya Charitamrita, then your general mourning, then your mourning, basically getting up, getting ready, that's technically what's called abhigamana. Right? Deity worship has five parts. You got abhigamana, or preparing yourself to go to the temple. Then you have upadana, where you prepare the paraphernalia used for worship. Then there's yoga, where then arranging the paraphernalia and purifying it, bringing it to the spiritual platform, bringing yourself to the spiritual platform. Then there'll be ijja, where you actually do the worship, and then swadhyaya will be studies and other activities that actually support deity worship. You know, studying the shastra, chanting your japa, associating with devotees, taking care of guests, dealing properly with all living entities, right? Because if you worship God and accept Him as the all in all, then why not all His living entities? Not you're nice to God, not nice to anybody else. Right, that's not exactly, it doesn't endear one, you know, so we don't find that it's historically it's ever endeared anyone to anyone else. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, we worship God, we worship, you know, the Lord, but then, you know, someone else is worshiping God and all that, we don't mind, you know, burning it at the stake or, you know, other things like that, you know what I'm saying? Because they happen to follow a different ritual. Does that make sense? Like that. So then waking in the morning, when one wakes up, then the tendency is, because sleep is controlled by ignorance, then one chants the holy name, right, before one's even really conscious of what's going on. That will clear the ignorance. Then one offers obeisance to the spiritual master. Then one gets up, one offers respect to the earth, because she holds us up, she gives us support, she's the mother. So we step on the earth with the right foot first. You know, you have the saying, Western saying, got out of the wrong side of the bed. So this will be left over from that understanding. Then you go to the toilet, you'll wash properly, you'll brush your teeth, you'll clean your tongue like that. Take your shower, then, dry yourself properly. Then, you'll put tilak, you know, dress how you're going to dress, chant any mantras you're going to chant, remember the Lord, and then go to the temple. Does that make sense? So you have directions like that. So there is directions on what that means. Is that do kind of what you're talking about, or?
Yes. But also, like, what's the mentality of someone?
What is the mentality? Well, in the beginning, if it's something new, then it's more on the rule, because the rule has been coming from Guru Sadhu and Shastra, so that's its connection. Once one becomes habituated, one becomes, you know, expert at following any kind of pattern or sadhana, then one generally tries to remember the Lord during that. Because one's already the activity itself is there. One, they'll be just see that the quality of the activity is proper and all that. But two, also if there has a chance, one will remember the Lord in it. But the point is it's the way the Lord likes to do it. Like what we explained is actually the same way how God wakes up and gets up and does things. So the idea is that His lifestyle is what He gives to us to follow. Right? If we want to associate with Him, it's naturally follow the same lifestyle. Does that make sense? Okay. Does that work, or is that anything left out? Because yeah. Otherwise it's more specific detail than, okay. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. How can we retain our intensity? basically by cultivating knowledge. See, because in the beginning, we're enthusiastic, basically you're dealing with emotion. Right? It's new, it's exciting, like that. So that's very good. And now to maintain that, then one should actually be intellectually convinced that it's good. That being convinced, you can keep the mind inspired, right? Because there's more to think about, more to absorb the mind. If you're intellectually developing, then you'll also be able to expand the mind's involvement by different activities of the body, body, mind, and words. Does that make sense? So that's why it's very important actually to, you know, study the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. You know, read these books, associate with the Bodhi. Then that will mean. Another very major thing is that by the devotional process, automatically one's purified, one's uplifted, one will be inspired automatically. One doesn't have to worry about that. Generally, what takes the inspiration down is offenses. Right? That's why it was mentioned before in the second ten, group of ten, to avoid any defenses in the holy name or in worshipping the deity. Right? Number nine, once you carefully avoid the various offenses in chanting the holy name of the Lord or in worshipping the deity in the temple. Because those offenses, that will put a cloud over the advancement, and that's where one will lose one's enthusiasm. Does that make sense? Otherwise, the process itself is naturally uplifting and inspiring. That makes sense, you know. And so that would be a major thing. The other is also is that as we go in Krishna consciousness, then in the beginning, so there'll be so many things that we do by habit, right? So when we're new in Krishna consciousness, those will go on, and we won't even worry about them. And then we'll be absorbed in the enthusiasm. So then going to the temple, being the devotees, chanting, you know, offering the prasad, all these different things are new and inspiring. Then with time, as those become habit, then as habit is, it can be used to your advantage or disadvantage. Advantage means now you're more expert, so now you can absorb yourself more in Krishna, or now you're more expert, so the mind doesn't need to focus on it, and so now you may think of anything else, go back into thinking about mundane activities. So, to avoid that from happening, then as the mind means it's not new anymore, right? Then the intelligence, one has to have knowledge and, and willingness to use the intelligence so that as that starts again, one's natural activities that one was doing before one took up the process, start kind of like naturally flooding back is important because we've just been doing the ordinary, you know, or we've been doing it nicely but as quick as possible so we can go back to what's new. But with time then we start to think, well, this is important, I have to take care of this or that, there's so many things. Then we have to be able to use the intelligence to analyze and see and connect those things now to Krishna. So then that will be the inspiring thing. How do all these activities, my occupation, the family, the different activities that I have, how now to connect them? Because what's inspiring are the direct activities. You know, these five, you know, hearing Bhagavatam, associating with devotees, chanting the holy name, Sankirtan, you know, how you say, visiting the temple. These things, worshipping the deity. That's what's going to take the attention. Those are direct. But as we become accustomed with those, you know, after some years, then the tendency is then all the indirect start becoming noticed again by the mind. So in that time, if you've equipped yourself, then you can engage those things, the indirect, properly through analyzation in the Lord's service. Does that make sense? So that's why the process is called Buddhi Yoga, or the Yoga of Intelligence, because you're using whatever you need to make it work, whether it's karma, jnana, or jnana, it doesn't matter. So in the beginning, then the karma, because it's all Krishna karma, is going to absorb yourself. But as as that becomes less absorbing and other karma comes up, you have to use jnana to control that. Right? And once that habituation is there, then jnana can be used. Does that make sense?
One question on deity worship. As a part of right here in the temple, and when we have the curtains open and we've got deities right in front of us, at times, even I've been a party, we tend to talk amongst each other, even when the deities are there right in front of us.
As long as it's something in connection with service or that Krishna, then it's nice. But so if it's not, then better just go outside. You understand?
Yes.
Just like this. Let's put it this way. If you're married?
No.
No. If you're dealt with women?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, if you and your friends start talking and the conversation has nothing to do about the women or anything that connects, that the women can connect to, what happens to your good time with the women? What happens? It ends.
Yes.
Right. So, therefore, that's the principle. So if it's about Krishna, it's connected to Krishna, then fine, if not, step outside. Okay. And when you're done, then come back here.
Sure.
While deity worship at home, is it more important all the rules during worship or the relationship you have between you and the deity?
Okay. So it has to be one or the other. It's either all the rules are important or it's the relationship. What about trying a combination? You know what I'm saying? The reason rules are there are to ensure that you do it nicely and properly and all considerations are there. Because it's something new and different that we're not used to, therefore it appears like a lot. If you were very accustomed with deity worship, then you can sit down with a big fat book on, you know, some very elaborate worship, and you can just thumb through it and figure out what's going on. You know what I'm saying? Because you're familiar with it. Like, you know, so let's say like Achman, if it takes 1.5 pages to write it down, the full Achman, it takes 7 seconds to do if you know what you're doing. You know what I'm saying? You know how many pages it would take if you wrote down how, by Western standards, you would greet someone and shake their hand? You know what I'm saying? It's just something that you do, but if you actually wrote it down, you had no idea. You're going, it's a new thing for you, or you're going there, and so someone's explained it to you, but you just don't remember, you want it written down. Does that make sense? It would take up probably many pages. You come together, you know, stand not too close, you know, not too far, right? Because you're feeling in the West, shaking hands is basically a Western kind of thing, so you have to use European spacing. Don't use Asian spacing. You'll freak the guys out. They're going to think you're gay, right? So therefore, you have to stand at the right distance. So then, therefore, we could probably even write down in centimeters, you know, exactly what's a general distance like that. Like that. Then once you, you know, say, you know, nice to meet you or something like that, then you reach your hand out, you know, and it's a particular angle, it's not straight, that would look too stiff, it's slightly down like that. The fingers aren't spread apart, and that looks like you're trying to grab something, you know, like that, but feel real uncomfortable. So you keep the fingers together, but keep the thumb up, right? If you keep the thumb down, they'll also wonder, maybe it's going to be a slap back. You have to keep the thumb up like that. Then it's going to be, then the hand will engage like that, and so then you very carefully, you know, bend your fingers around the heel of their hand like that. And then the thumb at that time then will lower and also grab the hand. If you want them to give a good impression that, you know, you're a man and that, you give a very firm handshake. You're not trying to break their hand. It's firm. You hold it nicely. It's not just a moment. If it's just a moment, then it's lack of confidence. If you hold it too long, then again they might think you're gay. You have to just get the timing just right. like that, right? We're just starting. So that's the whole point. So when you look at a book on deity worship, you think, oh, so many rules, why do we have to do this? But if you left anything out in the shaking of the hand, it wouldn't work. It just wouldn't work. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing that's always amusing, is how, because it's something very new, then those that it's new with, especially Westerners, they'll either take the rules very nicely because they're from a background that's more conservative, so they're used to rules like this and that, or they try as hard as possible to throw out as many as they can, just because it's easier for their kind of, you know, middle class Western background to kind of accommodate. You know what I'm saying? Upper class Western doesn't throw out rules. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
Yes.
And if you're from off the street, you know you gotta follow rules or you get your butt kicked. Right? So therefore they'll follow them, but they're generally more simple. So it's not they don't want to follow it, it's just maybe too much for them. It's not, you know what I'm saying? But it's the ones in the middle, they just try to get rid of it because it's an annoyance to them because it's not what their mommy taught. Right? And that's the bottom line. Like that. They may intellectualize it as something else, but I really think they'd be really hard-pressed to describe it as something other than that. Because the point is why are all those rules there? Because it establishes the relationship properly. So that's why they're there. Right? Religion means you have to have a form. Right? Ultimately, religion simply means the natural, unchangeable nature of something. That's actually religion. Prabhupada, when he describes religion, he doesn't say, you know, like a dictionary, a body of rules or rituals like this that, you know, distinguish one particular. No. He says the inherent unchangeable nature. He gives the example, sugar is sweet, fire is hot, water is wet. So the soul has an inherent nature, God has an inherent nature, material energy has an inherent nature. And so when you combine those, then you're dealing with inherent nature, you're not dealing with anything else. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So then dealing with that inherent nature, there will be laws, because you have a nature, there's things you like, things you don't like. Dogs, they don't like it. If you try to touch a dog on the top of its head, either get your arm bit off or they go neurotic, one or the other. Right, you know, so if it's, you know, if it's a pit bull or, you know, a Rottweiler or that, then, you know, watch your hands. You know, if it's a Chihuahua, then you're going to get something very neurotic. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. Okay, so the whole idea is there's a nature. So you follow the rules, it's because that's how your inherent nature nicely matches with the other person's inherent nature in the situation you're in, performing the activity you're performing, trying to get the result you're trying to get. You change the rules, it changes the whole thing. You don't address the nature, someone's not going to be satisfied, the activity won't be complete, so therefore you won't get your result. You know what I'm saying? Oh, why do we have to follow so many rules? We come to the store and we have to pull out money every time. You know, why can't we just take the things? You'd say that's absurd. You know, why do we have to go into the shop? Why can't we just sit outside and whistle and tell them to come out and bring the stuff? You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So these things, how you say, it doesn't work like that. Everything is rules. But the point is, we don't even recognize how it is. You know what I'm saying? We're sitting there, we're sitting at his corner. Stop. Right? Car in the car. Stop. We can't turn left. Right? Because we're waiting for the light to change. There are no cars there. Same time, there are people on the curb wanting to cross the street. And they're standing there, and we're stopped. There's no thing stopping them from going across, but they're waiting for the light. And nobody's thinking, hey, wait a minute. You know, there's no traffic here, there's nothing stopping us, why aren't we walking? You know what I'm saying? Because they're just conditioned, you go up, you push the little button on the pole, and wait for the light to change. But that's a rule. right? You understand? And how do you push the button? You know, you don't come up and use your nose, you don't kick it. You know, use your elbow, or, you know, use a flying, you know, sidekick. Or, you know, you say, just go up and you just, you know, you push it with your thumb, or you push it with your hand, depending on what kind of button it is. You know, it's a big one that sticks out, you use your palm. You know, it's the one that's inside, you use a thumb. You know what I'm saying? So we could say, you know, taking the thumb and, you know what I'm saying, you go through the whole thing again. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So we're used to them. We don't think. We walk within the lines and stuff like that. When I was a kid, you walked across the street wherever you wanted, as long as you get the main rule is don't get run over. Like that. So you have basically like that big 8-lane highway. Like that, there were places you could just walk across it. You know, cars are going by at 80 miles an hour. You don't use miles. You use kilometers. So it means 120 kilometers an hour, the cars are going by. So what do they call it? Fuzzy intelligence? The kind of thing where you can judge the car and everything like that and walk in them. And you just walk across and you just miss the cars. They're happy, you're happy. Right? I went back 20 years later. You know, same kind of street, same situation. I step off the curb. Everything on the street stops like that. Because now they've made a rule, if a pedestrian steps their foot off the curb onto the street, all the cars have to stop. So I had a lot of very upset cars. And I'm thinking, you know, what happened? I was just going to cross the street. Do you understand? So you just get used to a set of rules, you don't think about it, you know. The milk goes back in the refrigerator, you know. Stuff like that. You don't leave it on the counter. It goes poetry. You can say, why am I restricted by this? Why can't the milk just, you know, be happy and not go sour? Like that. Why am I forced to take that 3 nanoseconds to stick it back in the refrigerator? You know? You know what I'm saying? It's just the way it is. So that's the whole idea, is that the rules are followed because it pleases somebody. But to follow them and then think, because I follow rules, therefore I am religious, or therefore I am spiritually advanced, that's the mistake. Because the point is to please the person. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
Yes.
If you just came out and did the rules, you know, we were talking about, we're shaking the hand, people would think it's funny, right? The boy brings the flowers for the girl, you know, like that. Okay, now she gives flowers. Okay, check, okay. Then, you know, then down says, you know, says, you know, I brought these for you, you know, you're very important to me, you know, and like that, and you're smiling a lot too much, you know, stuff like that. And the girl just going, man, wow, this is weird. You know what I'm saying? So he is following the rules. He's thinking it's a great job. You know, Casanova doesn't have it so good. You know, and stuff like that. That the person's not impressed. Does that make sense?
Yes.
That's the whole idea, is that the rules are to please the person. They give a form through which, that's what religion does. It gives a clear form through which you can express your affection for God and for other living entities. It's not meant as a restrictive group of rules just to give you trouble, right? God doesn't sit up there and chortle, you know, as people follow rules and have so many problems, you know, like that. That's not what makes him happy, right? He's happy anyway, right? So he's not doing all these things just to give trouble. Does that make sense? So it's a matter of understanding what religion is. Religion is actually a method of expressing your affection towards other living entities that actually is in line with your nature and their nature. If that's understood, religion works very nicely for you. You know, your condition, you're satisfied in your condition state, you're satisfied in your constitutional or transcendental state. If you don't understand that, you're just going to be dissatisfied in everything. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Like that. And if you don't follow God's religion, you will make up your own. Conditioned soul has to live by religion. They'll make up their own. We have our initiation ceremony, so does the local gang around the corner. You know what I'm saying? They have their religion. Scientists say they don't have, they have a very strict religion. Right? Academics, they have their own religion. Right? Everybody, that means, if you don't follow God's religion, you'll make one up. The living entity, the conditioned living entity can't function without religion. Because he has a nature, he needs to express it. So either you'll make your own up that's not really satisfying. You know, it's not great as an initiation ceremony to stand there and have somebody turn around with their back to you and throw a knife at you. And you know, if they don't kill you, then you're part of the gang. You know, so it's not, you know, what you call inspiring. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing, is why not God? You know, why something else? Is that okay?
Yes.
Something else.
Yeah. At the time of paying obeisance to Krishna.
At the time of paying obeisance.
To deity of Krishna.
Okay.
What should we pray for?
What should you pray for? Generally at the time of offering obeisances, the main thing is just to offer prayers to the spiritual master, because that's your connection to the Lord. Right? Because you're, in other words, you're offering obeisance to the Lord because he's your Lord. But then you have the person that you're connected to him through. So that's the main thing. If you want to, after having done that, then offer prayers, but then that's called obeisances. Prayers are a different thing. Right? So then you stand up, then you come for the deity, that's when you offer prayers. So it's two different things. Obeisances are one thing, prayers are another. Okay? Yes.
Maharaj, we are incredibly messed in this material world because we have misused our monetary independence which Krishna has given us. Then Krishna knew that we are going to misuse this independence and going to be...
Then Krishna know we're going to misuse
he
it, so he knew it, so actually it's his fault, so why do I have to work so hard like that?
No, but he knew that we are going to misuse this monetary independence.
He knew we were going to misuse this, so... What's the point?
Why he has given this minute independence?
Why did he give you this minute independence? Okay, are you happy that you're here in Sydney?
Yes.
So, wasn't that a bit independent? What would your grandmother say? Would she allow it? Would she want her great-grandchildren growing up in this city?
Not yet.
Okay, so then why did you take that independence? Your great-grandmother should have known. You understand? It's the nature of the living entity to be independent. God doesn't. God, of course, knows, but that's not the point. The point is your independence is there to choose whether to serve God or not. Because if we say God knew, why did he give us the independence? Then we're trying to shift the responsibility of the blame, who's the idiot, to God. Because if he had known he could just make us, you know, so he wouldn't make a mistake, then we wouldn't be here. No, but that's the responsibility. You're an individual living entity. You yourself individually made that choice to come here. 9 out of 10 living entities go to the spiritual world. 1 out of 10 come here. You understand? So we're the idiots. You know what I'm saying? So it's like the majority figure out that this isn't the place to come. Right? They take one look at Sydney and decide, no, I think the spiritual world is a little bit better. Like that. And when you move around in Dhabi, you don't have to have one of those little E things, you know, you don't have a problem. You know, move through nice forests, you don't have to go underground and then wonder what happens if it breaks. Will I be able to get out quick enough? Will the guy in front of me, you know, when the water breaks, I hope I'm not behind, you know, an 80-year-old grandmother who's going to scream. You know what I'm saying? So they don't have to worry about that. So 9 out of 10 decide not to come here. not a matter of how we got here in that way. The point is we got here because of being envious, because of wanting to be God, wanting to be the controller and the enjoyer. So if we want to get out of here, then we have to recognize that we're servants of God, not God, and God is the controller and enjoyer. If we do that, we can get out. That's more important. Right? So don't shift the blame, take responsibility. Right? That's what all the self-help books tell you anyway. Right? Take responsibility. Right? It's your life. Okay.
Maharaj, when it comes to doing activities related to the temple, what level should we keep, you know, the Vedic concept of auspiciousness and inauspiciousness? For example, if somebody was part way in the family, do we still, you know, continue the service, or do we, you know, say they don't have to send the person to find the temple?
Means the question is specifically about that or about something else?
About auspiciousness, like...
No, but I'm saying you still have different auspiciousness.
Oh, sorry, but what I'm saying is that I say...
Because in that one, the point is like this. It's like, if you're standing before the deity, looking at the deity and seeing your dead grandmother, then what's the use? That's the point. So, according to your natural attachment, that's how you should consider it. You know what I'm saying? If you can come before the deity and see the deity and properly relate to the deity as you always do, then it's not so important. But if you are very emotionally affected by it, then it gives days, you know, for that, because that's the natural. Brahmins 10, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas 15, Shudras 30, because that's how they would normally be affected for that many days. After that, then the mind becomes peaceful and they're actually able to function properly. But if by one's devotional development or by, you know, some other one is able to function, then that's another thing. Two is one who is engaged in sacrifice. You know, if you have deity worship, you're doing service to the deity, then, I forget what that's called, it's called sutra. Then one's not bound by that rule. The king is never bound by impurity. Someone who's performing a sacrifice is never bound by impurity. Someone who's performing a vow is not bound by that because they're already doing a higher piety. In other words, the question of piety, it's not a matter of throwing out piety, it's a matter of it's replaced by some higher piety. That's why one needs some knowledge. If one wants to start throwing out rules, that's not a problem. That's also Vedic. But you have to have knowledge to throw it out. So the person who has no knowledge, only sentiment, throws out a rule, they're unqualified to throw out a rule because they're not replacing it. Rule must be there. You have to replace it with something, right? Right? You know, it's like I throw out the shaking of hands because the relationship with the person is so intimate, we don't bother that. They come, I just give them a hug. So I've thrown out the one, but I've replaced it with another. You understand? So that's how it works. Devotees don't care for lower rules because they're following higher. But if you can't explain it, then you shouldn't be so proud as to feel you can throw them out, the rules. You know what I'm saying? And especially since, like, one will say, oh, so many rules, 64 rules. Rupa has called this. This fits on, what is this? How many pages is this here? This is 1, 2, 3, 4 pages. And that's what probably gives an explanation. Hari Bhakti Vilas is that. You're taking 64 rules out of a few thousand pages. Put it on 4. And then devotees want to take these 4 pages and throw it out. Oh, so many rules, we're not smarters. It's like, who even told you smarters exist? Right? When you were rolling around in the gutter down there, then the other guys in the gutter were talking about smarters and, you know, rules and silent postures, right? Yeah? Which gutter were you in? So, you know what I'm saying? So that's the point, is the devotee, there's a saying in Bengali, that you take a knife and you sharpen it on the tree, and then once it's sharp, then you cut the tree to test if it's sharp. Don't be like that. The spiritual master then gives you all these nice things. He's already gone through the Vedic literature, reduced it down to what practically works for you. So everything he gives is usable and should be used. And then he talks about smartness who use beyond that. And then the devotees take this smartness and apply it on Srila Prabhupada's rules. That is, they don't have that qualification. That is cheap. That is dishonest. Right? This Prabhupada who said we chant and we don't care for the rules. And then he gives us these rules. You know, we think rule is rule. It's such a narrow-minded, you know, intellectually stunted understanding. You know, you want to see rules. We can talk rules. Like that. You know what I'm saying? But what Prabhupada's given here is so reduced. You go into the deity room, you deal with one achman cup. One. You know what I'm saying? And then if you do a bathing, then you have a pot of water. So you have two. So if you were doing full puja, according to the full Pancharatric rules, you would have seven different vessels of water for different purposes. What you clean your hands with is completely different than what you'd use for an achman, which is completely different than what you'd use for the deity's achman, which is different from what we'd use for if you were offering the various items, the 69 to the Lord, like that. So I mentioned four, there's three more. So you're doing pretty good that you're using one achman cup, coming in, doing your achman, and that achman is being used also for the deity. So if anyone wants to talk about too many rules, then if they want, then, you know, we can have a time where we discuss what Pancharatra really looks like. You know, what keeps the Shrees and the Mudlas busy all day? Does that make sense? So that's the whole idea, is that the rules have been reduced down to just what essence. That's what Prabhupada's making the point here. Rupa Goswami, and this is 500 years ago, he's saying, we're getting down to the basics that always apply. Keep those always apply. Right? Even if you're just out in the Kopan and Kanta, you still follow these. Right? The Goswamis wouldn't offer obeisances or offer notable prayers or offer prayers or obeisances or circumambulate the deity or take Charamrita. So they may not do so many other technical rules, but those are details. The principles are also what Prabhupada has given us. All of them basically are all principles. All principles. Does that make sense? So they always apply. And not to be thrown out in the name of, oh, I chant Hare Krishna, I don't care for the rules, but the rules are given to us by Prabhupada. So if you don't care for Prabhupada's rules, that means you don't care for Prabhupada's instructions, that means you don't actually care for Prabhupada. But, you know, it sounds good. Does that make sense? But the point is they have to be applied time, place, and circumstance. So there may be some adjustment, but that doesn't mean otherwise. You know what I'm saying? You go to the bathroom when you're traveling in your car, you got your shoes and socks on, you're out in the comfy bathroom, you may not wash your feet. No one's going to complain. But when you come to the temple, you don't say, well, I didn't wash my feet there, why I have to wash here? It's a different situation. You know what I'm saying? So you have to be able to discriminate. So that's the point, is intelligence means discrimination. Intelligence has two functions. Discriminate the difference and to discriminate the similarity. That's the two things the intelligence does. If you can't do that, don't claim to be intelligent. So if you can't tell the difference between time, place, and circumstance, you know, and at the same time use oh time, place, and circumstance or yukta vairagya, you know, these are all very nice tact sayings, but they're coming from the emotional platform. There's absolutely no intelligence being applied here. It is very personal, and it is very considerate of the individual and the application to the individual. So because of that, one should be very, very mature in application to make sure that one is not leaving something one could use to advantage. You know what I'm saying? Just because it's a little bit of work. Everything's work in this world. You know what I'm saying? If we were really worried about work, would anybody have kids? You know what I'm saying? I think in Denmark, you get paid if you have a kid. Here they'll pay you after you've had it. There they'll pay it just so you say you're going to have it. You know, they'll put you on the list, you know, you're going to have a kid after 3 years, they'll start paying you now. You know, it's just because nobody goes. This will be some child support, they'll help. You know? But, yeah.
The International Youth Festival
is happening.
It's
International Youth Festival
is
happening. And you want to know why they didn't invite me.
one of the main instructions that Catholic Pope was giving was a climatic change. And
he was giving an instruction for a climatic change.
You know, like concern about the climatic change.
Concern about climatic change.
And people were giving, like, you know, people can relate to that concern, and second concern was, I actually came with the headline, Populate or Perish. It was the second message.
Populate or Perish.
Yeah, it was the second message.
Populate or Perish.
Yeah.
Perish meaning, like, you have a priest and he has a little group that he teaches to, that kind of can perish.
Like, either populate or perish. Like you know,
who's going to perish?
Perish.
White Christian.
Did you
know that?
We.
Okay.
He said, we.
Okay. Populate or perish?
My question is,
so what are you worried about? Do they have anything else to offer to appeal to the public? Then, do we have something else to offer?
But people are not trying, they're connecting to us. You know?
But are you out trying to connect to them? What are you doing to connect to them? How do they know you exist? You know what I'm saying? How do you know when you walk down the street today that these kids, because there's a lot of local kids, right? How do you know that the kids that are on the street are part of this whole Catholic presence? How do you know? How can you tell? Right? How can you tell a bunch of the Catholic kids from local kids?
Some of them are carrying Irish flags.
Yeah, they have flags, or they have these red coats, or they got badges. How do they tell you're a devotee? Huh? You got a beep there. Okay. My point is that unless people know you're there, unless they know you have something to say, right, then how are you going to influence? So you have to find ways and means to get it across. Right? That's one thing. Two is, okay, let us say we talk global warming. how is that going to change people's lives, really? Right? Does that make sense? How are you going to change your life? Because what do you have to do to stop the global warming? Does that make sense? The Pope came in on an airplane, drove to his spot in a car. Would that have anything to do with global warming? You know what I'm saying? So that's the difficulty. Is that, you know, it sounds nice. It's an important concern, so if they can do something with industry and all that, that's nice, but they also like their money. Those industries give a lot of money to the church. You know what I'm saying? So when he's addressing how many multinational corporations are standing there listening to what he's saying. You know what I'm saying? So the common kid, what is that common kid? That kid from Ireland that's flown in here, what is he going to do with this if there's a concern? What are they going to do? You know what I'm saying? So it sounds good, sounds nice. That's one thing. You know, it works general and all that. That's another thing. Okay. Let us say you want to buy a cauliflower. Where can you get it?
The market.
And where are they available? Where are these markets? There's none here in Sydney. They don't eat cauliflower. Are they easily available? Is there kind of like one on every corner, or not one on every corner? Supermarkets, are there a lot of supermarkets? Not so many. You don't get around. Are you new here? Let us try this. You want to buy a 5-carat diamond. Where are you going to find that?
In
a jewelry shop. And there are about as many jewelry shops that sell those as shops that sell cauliflowers. No. It's a good chance this is probably a particular street that you have to go to buy them. Right? And if you walk in like that, they'll probably throw you out. Right? So, therefore, if you want to sell cauliflowers, you can do it. But if you want to sell diamonds, that's a whole other discussion. Right? So he's talking global warming. We're talking about developing love for God. So, which do you want to present? Yeah, so now if you can make the presentation of developing love for God as popular as, you know, global warming, great. You know what I'm saying? But he's only saying that because it's popular. Otherwise, since when has the Vatican worried about all these things?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's not their main worry. They're priests. They worry about theology. They worry about religious practices. That's what they absorb themselves in. So it's not so important. You can relate to it. You can give an example of it. But the point is, this is the point. You follow God's laws, these things don't happen. You don't follow God's laws, then you have problems like this. So the real problem is not whether they, you know, use this emission or that emission. It's why don't you follow God's laws? Then if you did that, you wouldn't do anything. Right? If it's God's river and it's God's ocean, why would you pollute it? You know what I'm saying? Because if you don't think it's God, therefore you pollute it. So that's the solution to God consciousness. It means there's no material solution to material problems. There's only spiritual solutions for material problems. So the only thing lacking is God consciousness, not something else. Is that okay? Shri Prabhupada.